Today, let's paper over some more cracks. A market update for the 12th of June 2021. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today we're going to look at the markets over the past week and try and read the runes. As normal, we'll start in the US because that market is such an influence on ours, and then traverse the globe to see how other key markets behaved as well. Now, there's a real tug of war going on between the positive impact of the global economic rebound and concerns about whether robust economic growth will prove to be inflationary, and so prompting the Federal Reserve to withdraw its extraordinary monetary policy support sooner than anticipated. But equity markets in general, including the US, are continuing to benefit from accommodative central bank policies, narrowing credit spreads and steepening yield curves. So the US stocks closed modestly higher at the end of a pretty torrid week, marked with few market-moving catalysts and persistent concerns over whether current inflation spikes could linger and cause the US Federal Reserve to tighten its dovish policy sooner than expected. The Nasdaq gained the most among the three major indices, while the bellwether S&P 500 squeaked its way to a second straight record closing high. For the week, the S&P and the Nasdaq advanced from last Friday's close, while the Dow Jones posted a small weekly loss. The indices have been range-bound, with few catalysts to move investor sentiment. Much of the focus centred on Thursday's consumer price data, which eased jitters over the duration of the current inflation wave. Of course, the summer is settling in, people are slipping out of work early, and there's nothing in the news that's going to materially drive the markets in either direction for now, so investors perhaps are waiting to see what happens in the earnings season ahead. The Federal Reserve has repeatedly said that near-term price surges will not metastasize into longer-lasting inflation, and that's an assertion reflected in the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Report, which was released on Friday and showed inflation expectations eased from last month's spike. The closely followed index for June came in sentiment terms, 86.4 versus an expectation of 84.2 and the May reading of 82.9. And they said consumer sentiment rose in early June, recouping two-thirds of May's losses. The early June gain was mainly among middle and upper income households, and stronger focus on future economic prospects rather than current conditions. Stronger growth in the national economy was anticipated, with an all-time record number of consumers anticipating a net decline in unemployment. Rising inflation remained a top concern of consumers, although the expected rate of inflation declined in early June. Perhaps of more interest is the drop in sentiment for buying a home and the sentiment gap between consumers and builders. Spontaneous references to market prices for homes, vehicles, and household durables fell to their worst level since the all-time record back in November 1974. These unfavorable perceptions of market prices reduced overall buying attitudes for vehicles and homes to their lowest point since 1982. These declines were especially sharp among those with incomes in the top third, which account for more than half the dollar volume of retail sales. Fortunately, in the emergence from the pandemic, consumers are temporarily less sensitive to price due to pent-up demand and record savings, as well as improved job and income prospects. And the acceptance of price increases as due to the pandemic makes inflationary psychology more likely to gain a foothold if the exit is lengthy. While expansive monetary and fiscal policies are still warranted, the accompanying rise in inflation will cause uneven distributional impacts, they said. Those impacts have already been noticed in June among the elderly and lower income households. A shift in the Fed's policy language could douse incipient inflationary psychology. It would be no surprise to consumers, as two-thirds already expect higher interest rates in the years ahead. But investors will now turn their attention to the Fed's statement at the conclusion of next week's two-day monetary policy meeting, which will be parsed for clues regarding the central bank's timetable for raising key interest rates. If the inflationary data is transient, will be around the 2% mark for the year, which would suggest the Fed will stay firm on stimulus and low rates. The bond market seems to agree, as benchmark US Treasury yields posted their biggest weekly drop in nearly a year. weighing on the interest-sensitive finance sector in recent sessions, but of course supporting tech stocks. So investors will keep their powder dry ahead of the Federal Reserve's two-day meeting. And of course, the bets are that there will be few surprises from the Fed. The backdrop of mixed economic data will help the central bank into its view of an uneven recovery that still requires support. The labour market isn't making the job gains that many expected, while inflation has surprised to the upside, although it's widely assumed to be transitory. Since the last meeting, economic data has delivered more questions than answers. In light of the uncertainty, it's hard to imagine any change in the Fed's messaging at the moment. While Fed members have recently shown an appetite to begin to talk about tapering, Chairman Jerome Powell isn't expected to give that much away. Powell will no doubt be asked about any tapering discussions in light of the April FOMC minutes. We expect him to echo Clarida and Quarles, who said that it might be appropriate to start talking about it in the next few meetings, but the committee is not there yet. This backdrop of the humdrum has been captured in recent market moves amid a lack of conviction from traders to make meaningful bets in either direction. The bond markets, however, have offered up noteworthy moves as the 10-year yield slipped by 1.5%, helping tech stocks continue their winning streak, which is set to stretch for 4 weeks. The S&P 500 closed at another record on Friday as a late show of investor appetite for stocks rounded off a week in which the hotter inflation report was largely cast aside ahead of that Federal Reserve meeting. The S&P 500 rose 0.19% to end the day at 4,247. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up just 0.04%, and the Nasdaq Composite was up just 0.35%. Tech stocks have been a big winner of the fall in rates, and added to recent gains on Friday, the emerging growth stocks, including Peloton and Zoom, were hit hard when rising rates scared investors out of stocks with frothy valuations, but they now appear to have regained favour. Energy was flat, but it was also a focus during the week as oil prices hit multi-year highs on bets that energy demand is set for a second lease on life as the reopening of the economies around the world boosts international travel. And the so-called meme trades also gripped investor attention as Danish biopharma Oxapharma became the new meme star overnight, but its fame proved short-lived, stumbling to a 56% loss after rising nearly 1,400%. The old meme stocks like GameStop and AMC were up 6% and 15% respectively. In tech, though, Apple is perhaps underperforming the major US indices. That by itself is a sign of weakness. It only gained 4% over a month, is barely holding up on its 200-day moving average, and it's lost its 50-day moving average of support. So in the light of that, maybe more weakness ahead. In the light of all this, the US dollar index was higher, up 0.48% to 90.51. The counterbalancing asset to the dollar, of course, is gold. Inflationary pressures are stonewalling a bullish move for gold as the expectations of rates increase tick higher. Gold endured a 20% correction over the last 8 months and then a 15% rebound, but it's retraced some of that, but not the majority of the losses. Further signs of inflationary pressures, of course, could sweeten the appetite for gold, but upside gains may be capped by an appreciating dollar if inflation fears send US Treasury yields climbing, said a senior research analyst at FXDM. There is a sense in the market that the Fed has got the market under control, saying that the inflation is transitory. So that's the whole focus right now, whether that can be achieved or not, said Ola Hansen, head of commodity strategy at Saxo Bank. Philip Strebel, precious metals strategist at Blue Line Futures in Chicago, said the logic bending move in the dollar did not make Friday's trading gold any easier. It's the same mind-numbing thing each week, he said. Between gold, the dollar, and yields, you have three different plates spinning at the same time, and you're trying to decide which one to go with when none really is appealing for now. So the gold speculator, whether bull or bear, may have found the perfect play for now. Just buy at 1,850 and sell well before 1,900. The $40 to $50 target for each trade may seem like a dumbed-down way to trade gold, when a myriad of chart signals and the intersection of Treasury yields and the dollar should be setting the course, yet a look at the weekly fluctuations on COMEX since mid-May suggests that the former may have generated more wins than any artsy-fancy strategy involving multiple hedges. As the week rolled on to a close, an all-too-familiar pattern reinforced itself on those who still cared to call gold a hedge against inflation, which it clearly was not, given its inability to respond to America's worst concerns about price pressures in more than a decade. Gold was down 0.9% on Friday to 1,879. Already in a steady rut since its late Thursday return to 1,900 pricing, gold took a decisive turn lower after that Friday release of the University of Michigan's data. And there was this from Money Metals. As foreign governments reportedly accumulate gold and de-dollarize their sovereign wealth funds, a Republican congressman is asking tough questions of the US Treasury about its secretive gold activities. Representative Alex Mooney, sponsor of the Gold Reserve Transparency Act of 2021, is requiring the first true audit of America's gold in decades. And he wrote to Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen this week requesting detailed information about the U.S. gold holdings delegated to the Federal Reserve and the International Monetary Fund and posed other questions. According to testimony in 2011 by Mr. Gary Engel, the Director of Financial Management and Assurance at the Government Accountability Office, about 5% of the U.S. gold holdings were stored at the time at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. He also stated that this gold had not been considered audited and that no assigning or inventorying of that gold had occurred since at least 1986. At the current time, what amount of U.S. gold holdings, he asked, is vaulted at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York or by the Federal Reserve using other depositories? And also, has this gold been recently audited, assayed, or inventoried? And if so, provide a copy of any relevant report. And then he asked, for what purposes is United States gold bullion stored at the Federal Reserve? According to testimony of Mr. Engel, Federal Reserve Bank of New York holds gold for other nations as well. Is the U.S.-owned gold stored at the Federal Reserve held in a physically segregated manner from the holdings of other nations? During the 2011 hearing, there was a reference to a report that 261 million ounces in U.S.-owned gold is part of the IMF's reserves. At present, how many ounces of U.S.-owned gold are in the possession of the IMF or pledged to the IMF, and where is that gold kept? And also, describe the purpose and nature of this arrangement, as well as what oversight procedures are in place. And then he also asked how much U.S.-owned gold is in the possession of or used by the Exchange Stabilization Fund as part of its activities, and what's the purpose and nature of that fund's gold activity. And he also wanted to know details as to what U.S.-owned gold is currently pledged, swapped, leased, or otherwise encumbered, and for what purposes, including but not limited to arrangements involving the Bank for International Settlements, the World Bank, the IMF, and other financial institutions, foreign or domestic. When his inquiries come shortly after introduced that bill to require the Comptroller General to immediately conduct a full assay, inventory and audit of the United States gold reserves and repeat the process every 5 years. There is evidence the US Treasury may have sold, swapped, leased or otherwise placed encumbrances upon some of America's gold over time. However, federal government officials have strongly resisted disclosures of these activities for decades. And so to address these concerns, the bill requires a full accounting of any and all sales, purchases, disbursements or receipts, a full accounting of all and any encumbrances, including due to lease, swap or similar transactions presently in existence or entered into in the past 15 years, and an analysis of the sufficiency of the measures taken to ensure the physical security of such reserves. To fulfill its obligations under the Gold Reserve Transparency Act, Government Accountability Office auditors would gain access to any depository or any other public or private depositories where reserves are kept, as well as related records. People are rightly concerned about the state of America's gold holdings, said said JP Cortez, policy director at Sound Money Defence League. The lack of full transparency by the federal government has hobbled public confidence. The Gold Reserve Transparency Act will ensure our gold reserves are accounted for. Elsewhere, oil prices climbed on Friday, tallying a third weekly gain to finish more than a two-year high, as the International Energy Agency says it expects global oil demand to return to pre-COVID-19 pandemic levels by the end of the next year. Producers will need to increase output to keep up with demand recovery, the Paris-based Energy Agency said in its June oil market report. It's forecast demand to rise in 2021 before growing at a faster rate next year, reaching 100.6 million barrels a day by the end of 2022. The market can't ignore the clearly bullish signal from the IEA report, in which the IEA calls for more oil to be produced by OPEC Plus, the organization of the petroleum exporting countries and their allies, to meet the oil demand recovery of 2022, said Louise Dixon, oil market analyst at Rice and Energy. Supply conservatism by OPEC Plus has supported oil prices since last year and is the reason prices have now reached such highs, she said in a note. There is definitely room for OPEC Plus to boost output from the second part of this year, and as long as this doesn't happen, there is a definite upside to oil prices. Earlier this month, OPEC Plus agreed to keep its current plan to gradually increase oil production through July in place, sending crude oil futures to their highest settlement in more than 2 years. Its next meeting will be July 1. There are still a number of factors which could affect the speed at which OPEC Plus can reverse its pandemic-induced production cuts, the IEA said. The pace at which the OPEC Plus cuts can be unwound will depend not only on the success of containing the spread of the virus and demand growth, but also the timing of the eventual return of Iranian barrels to the market. The Energy Information Administration on Wednesday reported a weekly jump in US gasoline inventories and a fall in implied demand for the fuel. The recent decline in demand could revert higher as the summer driving season progresses and as rising economic activity supports distillate demand, Marshall Steves, energy analyst at IHS Market, told Market Watch. The recovery in the US economy is still expected to drive global growth overall. US crude stocks are below normal at a four-month low and could tighten further as demand is expected to increase through the summer, he said. And data from Baker Hughes said that US production may soon rise as the number of active US rigs drilling for oil was up 6 to 365 this week. Meanwhile, Iran is a wild card depending on the outcome of nuclear talks, says Steves. If successful, another 1 million barrels per day in exports could result in OPEC would need to respond to that. WTI was up 0.74% on Friday to 70.81. And cryptos continued to meander this week, with Bitcoin up 1.96% to 37,124 and Ethereum down 3.89% to 2,341 at the time of writing. More crypto miners are being forced to shut down amid China's Bitcoin crackdown. The major Bitcoin mining regions in China have pushed miners out of operation. Although they have the largest Bitcoin mining hash rate, the National Development and Reform Commission have asked regulators in the region to close all crypto mining operations. In addition, the Information Technology Department issued a document to stop the authorities in the region from approving and setting up new crypto mining projects. And also the department asked that the province leadership suspend all existing mining operations. The notice says that authorities in the province should investigate big data farms using their facilities to mine Bitcoin. Any data farm guilty would be punished. Companies that provide mining-related services will also be asked to cease operation. As China continues its Bitcoin crackdown, internet search engine Baidu and microblotting website Webio have been censored and blocked from crypto exchange searches. And as of the 10th of June, search results for Binance and Huobi have been blocked in the two platforms. In the past week, several crypto influencers and other crypto-related pages lost their account on Weibo. And yet, as I discussed with Alex Saunders on our monthly economic update, El Salvador has made Bitcoin legal tender, and there is speculation that India might formally recognize the asset. Yet, there is also much noise from central bankers about the risks of crypto and why central bank digital currencies are better. And of course, the question is, who wins will have profound implications. Over in London, stocks climbed on Friday, tracking gains for global equities, with resource stocks in the driving seat. That is as fresh data showed the strongest growth in the country in nearly a year. The FTSE was up 0.65% to 7,134, and that's a gain of 0.9% over the week. The pound US dollar was down 0.47% to 1.4106. The index was testing near-term highs around 7,120 early on Friday, and a breakthrough that could call for the test of the post-pandemic peak of 7,164 is possible. Stocks got a boost globally as investors shook off news of surging consumer prices in the US on Thursday, and of course US stocks climbed in early trading on Friday. Perhaps central banks have really convinced the markets that any rise in inflation will be short-lived and will not force them to ramp up rates so rapidly, said AJ Bell, investment director Russ Mould, in a note to clients. Meanwhile, data showed that the UK economy surged by 2.3% in April as less restrictive COVID-19 measures drove higher consumer spending. The data is further proof that the positive direction of travel is becoming established, said Richard J. Hunter, head of markets at Interactive Investors, in a note to clients. While the strength of sterling may crimp some of the further gains for the FTSE, it's currently up by 9.9% this year, the UK government is gaining popularity as an investment destination, with its undemanding valuation increasingly enticing overseas institutional buying interest, he said. But this week, Andy Haldane, chief economist at the Bank of England, broke from his peers in central banks around the rich world to warn that the beast of inflation could lead to dynamics not seen for half a century. If resurgent demand meets shrinking or static supply, the laws of economic gravity mean persistent price pressures will be hard to escape, Mr. Haldane said in an opinion article in the New Statesman. If wages and prices begin a game of leapfrog, we will get the sort of wage price spiral familiar from the 1970s and 80s, he said. The ominous warning echoes Larry Summers, the former US Treasury Secretary under President Bill Clinton, who last month accused central bankers of dangerous complacency in the fight against inflation. The economist said the Fed's desire to maintain years of ultra-loose policy, which includes massive bond buying and near-zero interest rates, could trigger a shock response from financial markets when it eventually winds those settings down in a knee-jerk reaction that could hurt the real economy. Over in Germany, stocks were higher after the close on Friday as gains in the software, transportation, logistics and industrial sectors led shares higher. At the close, though, the DAX rose 0.78% to hit a new time high of 15,693. In Japan, the Nikkei 225 was down 0.03% to 28,948, and the Shanghai Composite was down 0.58% to 3,589. On Inflation Watch, it's worth noting that Drewry's Composite World Container Index increased 4.1% or $263 to 6,726 per 40-foot container over the week. And that's 298.8% higher than a year ago. The average composite index for the container index is $5,361 per 40-foot container, which is $3,423 higher than the five-year average of $1,937 per 40-foot container. So you could see signs of inflation there. Now coming back to the local markets, at close in Sydney, the S&P ASX 200 gained 0.13%. There's a new high of 7,312. The benchmark index lifted 0.2% this week. That marks four straight weeks of gains. Gold miners posted the biggest gains on Friday, with Resolute Mining up 7.7%. Gold Road Resources advanced 5.5%, and Perseus Mining jumped 5.4%, and Northern Star Resources rose 4.4%. The major buy now, pay later stocks also performed strongly as Afterpay climbed 3.7% to 103.52 and Zipco climbed 4.1% to 7.15. Mesoblast added 5.9% to $2.15 and Appian rose 5.6% to 13.85. EML Payments closed 3.8% lower at 377, while all four major banks posted losses. That said, rising stocks outnumbered declining ones on the Sydney Stock Exchange by 809 to 512, and 436 ended unchanged and the local volatility index was down 12.52% to 11.32. And if you want more detail on individual stock movements, we'll now go through those. The S&P ASX 200 was up 0.13% to 7,312. The financial services index was down 0.76% to 6,533. The real estate trusts were down 0.65% to 1,569. And the volatility index was down 12.52% to 11.32. The S&P ASX 200 futures was up 0.7% to 7,358. Amongst the banks, ANZ was down 1.53% to 28.25. CBA was down 0.48% to 101.36. And NAB was down 0.6% to 26.46. Westpac was down 1.13% to 26.29. Bank of Queensland was down 1.57% to 8.77. And Bendigo Adelaide Bank was down 0.95% to 10.44. Suncorp was down 0.62% to 11.22. And Macquarie Group was down 0.62% to 151.56. AMP was up 1.24% at 1.22 with more news on future leadership at the company. And Genworth was up 2.89% to 2.85. McGrath was up 9.09% to 60 cents. And Unibet Rogue was up 3.3% to 9.4 cents. AFG was up 0.35% to 2.83. Mortgage Choice was at 1.94. Afterpay Touch was up 3.68%. to 103.52, and Symec was down 1.44% to 21.26. The Aussie dollar was down 0.59% to 77.06 cents. And the euro Aussie dollar was up 0.12% to 1.5713. The 2-year bond was down minus 144.4% to minus 0.004 in negative territory. The 3-year was down 5.43% to 0.244, and the 10-year bond was up 1.66% to 1.468. The gold Aussie cross was down 0.5% to 2,436.43. The Bitcoin Aussie cross was up 1.03% to 47,370. And the BetaShare US Equities Strong Bear Currency Hedge was down 1.75% to 1.120. So, sounding back, I think we are papering over the cracks at the moment, hoping upon hope that things are going to work out okay, but there are very many variables and uncertainties, and so I still think we should be cautious. There is a downside risk, which is definitely building. After all, we're at all-time high valuations on many exchanges, and we still don't know whether the virus is really going to get controlled, and we still don't know whether, in fact, central banks will dial back and when they will. So uncertainty rules, and I think that wallpaper paste will continue to be pasting stuff over the cracks for some time to come. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.